Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Emil Frankel, Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy at the U.S. Department of Transportation. And joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel.
Emil, you've been closely involved in formulating the administration's policy on Amtrak. Before we get into what some of the policy propositions are, can you give us a little bit of background as far as the state of rail transportation in America and what some of the pressing issues are?
Well, let me, first of all, Dave, limit my remarks here to passenger rail. There are a whole set of very interesting and very important issues on freight rail and freight rail as part of a broader system of moving goods. I might say, and I'll come back to passenger rail in a second, that we have made some proposals in safety on freight and goods movement. It has often been an orphan in public policy. I know I didn't pay much attention to it when I was commissioner at the state level and the state agency. I think our proposals are still relatively modest, but I think we try to get people to focus on the issue. Crossmodes, rail, truck, the interfaces, the intermodal connections between a ship coming into a port and a rail system or trucking so it reaches its eventual destination. And we're going to have some more proposals dealing with that, including working closely with the private freight rail system as part of that. Now let's come back to passenger rail. As I mentioned earlier, Amtrak actually has been operating without authority since September 30 of last year, just on the basis of an appropriation. That has not been unusual in the, 35 years or so that Amtrak's been in existence. It oftentimes has gone from year to year. It is an extraordinary situation, actually. It amazes me and others that people seem so locked in, so rigid in their views about, on the one hand, the federal government should play no role in intercity passenger rail, or even some people saying, and this is the case, passenger rail carries less than 1% of intercity traffic. And so there's some people that say, what do we need a passenger rail system for at all? And certainly the federal government shouldn't be playing any role in it. On the other hand, those people who would argue that a system that was created absentmindedly, I wouldn't even call it a system, a corporation that was created absentmindedly in the early 1970s when Congress and the administration was trying to deal with saving the private freight rail system. They relieved them of the burden of passenger rail, and they took a collection of cats and dogs, of odds and ends, and put them into something called Amtrak and called it a company or called it a system. And there are a lot of people who take the position today that we have a system, Amtrak is the same as intercity passenger rail, and that all it needs is a lot more money. It doesn't need any reform. It's a perfect system. Everything is great, except it needs a lot more money. That is not the view of this administration. This administration is, right up through the president, is absolutely committed to intercity passenger rail as a critical element, as an essential element of a multimodal national transportation system. But we also think that what needs to be reformed, because we have segments, we have corridors in which intercity passenger rail plays a very important role. We're in one here, the Northeast Corridor. It carries a very substantial portion of the half or more of the combined air and rail passenger movements between Boston and Washington are by intercity passenger rail. There are other places like California, particularly Southern California, the Pacific Northwest, where intercity passenger rail is an important and increasingly important mode. There are places where it should be, whether it's the extending the Northeast Corridor south to Virginia, North Carolina, to Atlanta, Florida, some parts of Texas, and obviously the Midwest, kind of hubbed on Chicago. Intercity passenger rail has really proven itself in those places. I think it is much more questionable, to be candid with you, that there is an essential national interest in assuring that there is intercity passenger rail between Orlando and Los Angeles, that there's a train that goes, three times a week between Orlando and Los Angeles, in which every passenger is subsidized by the United States taxpayers at the rate of $450, $500 a trip. So I think we need to parse this out. And what do we really mean? And the administration has just made a major proposal for reforming, thinking differently about intercity passenger rail with a real focus on strong regional systems where intercity passenger rail is competitive, has a market niche, plays an important role, and those are essentially between city pairs 300, 400, 500 miles apart, in which opening it up to greater competition, improved efficiency, and with a role for the federal government as a grantor, as it is in other transit other parts of the transportation system, whether it's highways or transit or airports, making grants to, in this case, individual states or groups of states, really creating partnerships. It's a different concept. And I must say I have been disappointed in the reaction, not that our proposal is perfect. It isn't by any means. These are very difficult, very complicated issues. But people are throwing up all sorts of straw men. There are people are saying, well, this is the British Rail model. It has nothing to do with the model of British Rail, the privatization, so-called, of British Rail. People have said this is a privatization scheme. It is not a privatization scheme. It's permissive. It allows greater competition once we go through a transition basis. And other people have talked about huge job losses, not just on the rail system itself, but huge job losses if the president's proposal were adopted, which is totally fictitious. I would hope, and what we hoped would and will come out of this discussion, is dealing with fundamentals. Let's talk about what intercity passenger rail should be. We don't have a monopoly on the right answers, but let's go back to the basic fundamentals and ask the right questions and try to, for the first time, design a system, because Amtrak was not a system. We do not have a national rail system in this country, and we need to develop first of all, a consensus about what that should be.
What's the next step in this dialogue to be able to come to a policy decision on a rail system?
Well, we're continuing to talk to stakeholders, whether it's the private freight railroads, and incidentally, outside of the Northeast Corridor, as you know, Amtrak travels on private freight lines almost entirely and has a right of access to those private freight rail lines. So the private freight carriers have to, as the owners of the underlying right-of-way, have to be parts of this. Labor has to be parts of it. The users obviously have to be parts of it, states and local officials. And we're reaching out to all of them and talking to all of them and trying to get them to engage us. We need to be engaged. And hopefully Congress will play that role. I think we have a high degree of confidence that the relevant jurisdictional committees in the Senate, the Commerce Committee under Senator McCain's leadership, will engage this issue seriously. And similarly on the House side, the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee, and that those will be forums in which we deal with fundamentals. And we hope people of goodwill will kind of get out of their corners, stop being so rigid, and talk about this and talk about some of the fundamental questions.
Let's switch gears for a moment and talk a little bit about the future of the department. What's on the horizon for the department over the next couple of years, and what is the role of policy in helping to be able to develop what that future looks like for the department?
I think in the next couple of years, outside of seeking enactment of these major pieces of legislation, Air 21 reauthorization, now called Vision 100, I believe, which actually has a conference report pending in both houses, so that could well be enacted this year. Getting enactment of safety or whatever the bill is going to be called by Congress, and dealing with intercity passenger rail, those clearly are the highest priority items. But overall, this emphasis on safety, highway safety, and safety in our transportation system generally, aviation safety, that remains a very, very great challenge. It permeates not only what this legislation will look like and our role in that, but also programmatic reforms. The balance, and we haven't talked about it very much here because our primary responsibilities have shifted to the Department of Homeland Security, but we need to be able to have a safe system, a secure system, but one that is efficient and productive. And there are some people who would say we can't have security without a system that, you know, is going to be slower. Well, we can't accept that. You know, the safest and most secure system is one that doesn't move anybody. You just shut down a port, that'll make it real safe and secure. Well, we obviously can't do that. But so how do we balance these things? And that requires a lot of thinking on our part, a lot of close work and cooperation with the Transportation Security Administration and other parts now contained within the Department of Homeland Security. But even within that, getting seatbelt use up, reducing drunk driving, driving under the influence, that'll remain a very high priority. This great emphasis on freight and goods movement, we'll have a lot more proposals to make. Improving technologies. The application of technologies, whether they're information technologies through the so-called ITS program, intelligent transportation systems, making them serve the users of the system, being more directed to that and not just toys for producers, but things that really make a difference in how we more effectively and efficiently use our system, as well as the application of technologies to speed up construction, make our systems safer. And while construction is going on, because, you know, we have an aging system. We have a great transportation system. I think we shouldn't overlook that, but it's also an aging system. There are parts of the interstate highway system that are, you know, 50 years old, just about 50 years old, and are undergoing rebuild. And how do we do that so we don't have projects that go on for 5 years? That's going to be a major, both programmatic and policy challenge. And in all cases, that the Department of Transportation, the United States Department of Transportation, must be a leader. We may not be the owner-operator of these facilities, but we do We must be the leader in terms of developing and pushing policies that make the entire system connected, effective, connected across regions, across modes, but safe and secure and efficient.
You've had a long career serving the public in different sectors. What advice would you give to someone interested in a career in public service?
I don't think they should be discouraged. I know that people are discouraged in many ways from the public sector today for a lot of reasons. The cost, sometimes if it's elective office, the direct cost of getting yourself elected, but the sacrifices that you must make, financial sacrifices that one must make to serve even for a short period of time, examination by the press, and not being held to objective standards. All these things are discouraging elements, but it is tremendously exciting, invigorating, your ability to really affect outcomes. All of us, I think, have the desire to have looked back on our lives and think that we've made a difference, that we have changed something for the better. And there is no greater opportunity to do that than in the public sector. However brief, I'm also an advocate because it's in my own life to be able to have the capacity to move back and forth between the private and the public sector, because I think it makes you more valuable in each of those sectors, having had the experience in the other. So I would urge people to look for opportunities for service, whether it's service, to take 2 years or 5 years or 6 years out to do it, or shorter term or on a voluntary basis. I think everyone will find it an invigorating, satisfying, fulfilling, if sometimes frustrating, experience, and one in which they can make a difference.
Well, Emil, we're out of time this morning. Dave and I want to thank you for squeezing us in your busy schedule.
Thank you very much.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Emil Frankel, Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy at the U.S. Department of Transportation. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Once again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.